All right, folks, thanks very much for tuning in. Another episode here of Breaking Inertia, and I have a fella, Murray Dock, on this episode, basically to give us his story and how far he's come with regards to gambling, how it's affected his life, and where he is, obviously, right now. Hi, Murray, thanks very much for taking the time, obviously, to talk to me and highlight the issues and stuff about around gambling and everything. Can you give people just like an introduction to who you are, what you've sort of been through, and we'll sort of tie in different things as we go along just throughout the episode here?
No bother. I'm Murray, and it's good to be here. And I'd say gambling's probably been a massive took a massive part of my time and mental health for maybe the guts of 10 or 12 years before I was even aware of it, you know. And where it led me was the Sister Concilio's Kimura in Uri for a 12-week rehab center. You know, it left me to a very rock bottom that, you know, that I was contemplating suicide numerous times, you know. But I would say I must be out of there now. I think I'm gamble-free maybe 18 months now, like, so.
Brilliant.
But people will think, you know, you would go into Newry and you do your 12-week program and you come out and you're cured, you know. Mm-hmm. You're never cured. You have to do a lot of work on it. But
yeah,
through that place, I found out a lot of my own underlying issues, what led me to gambling, why I gambled, why I drank. I haven't touched alcohol in 17 months now as well. Why I drank, and, you know, my defects of character and everything, you know. So I have a lot of gratitude to that, you know, that I believe it saved my life, you know.
Yeah. What was those underlying things that you sort of realized then that maybe led you to gambling and things?
Well, I was very, very insecure on what I hit it. Even in terms of like my appearance, I would have hit it. I would have like used sunbeds and dyed the hair and wore the best of clothes, and, you know, because I hated being judged. I always thought in my own head that people were judging me and watching me and talking about me and stuff, and probably a bit paranoid and stuff. So I would have, these feelings, I could never talk to her. I'd bottled them up. You know, it was my real escape from reality. But as in my early childhood, you know, I would have gambled and drank a lot because, you know, would have had a lot of problems getting on home. You know, my mum and my stepfather were separating and stuff. And
what age was that sort of happening at?
Maybe around 19, from about 18 to 21, things weren't great, you know. And then I was 21, finally, like a lot of rows and stuff, you know. But and we ended up losing our home and stuff, you know. The bank repossessed it and stuff, you know. So things around home weren't great. And I suppose it's not that I'm embarrassed to talk about it. It's things I don't really like to talk about too much, because I believe it's not just my story to tell. It's my mum's and my sister's. So
yes, 100%.
You know, yeah. So I try to be careful of what I go into, you know. But things weren't great. So I would have gambled a lot and stayed in the bookies, and even midweek I would have took a lot of drink too, just escape from everything, you know. And the feeling I got from gambling was the exact same feeling that I would get from drink as well. You know, we just had buzzing, chasing, and I would zone out, and all my worries would go away. And it was never really, looking back now, it was never really the money end of it. You know, you needed the money to gamble, but it wasn't. I was never chasing the money, like, yeah. The buzz, and escaping from reality and escaping from all the emotions and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so, were you in a good point to kind of actually be able to pay for these bets, and you know, did that sort of, because for me personally, like, I don't gamble, I don't know, would you be using like your spare cash? What way were you with your gambling habits and things?
From that time, I was 18 to probably 21, was wild. Like, you know, I would have been born. I was working, I was earning very good money. I had two jobs, in fact, one stage, but I would have been spare cash. Yeah, I would never like leave myself short in terms of, you know, food or stuff like that. But it got to maybe, there would have been weeks and weeks that I would have had to lie to my mum and borrow money off her, like, say that my wages weren't done in time, or I'd, you know, had bills to pay, and or the car needed a new tire or stuff like that. And bar off friends and stuff. You know, it did get out of hand for a while, but I managed to calm it down. And oh, I think maybe because I moved out of home and had more bills to pay myself. You know, I had a rent to pay and heating and food and a car, and I was doing well at work and stuff, and I was living with my ex-partner and stuff, so
yeah,
I had more responsibility, so the gambling was still there, and it wasn't out of control. But 4 years later, once we separated, like, and it wasn't nothing to do with the emotions of a breakup. It was just that it just felt that I was so free to do whatever I wanted with my money. I moved back home, and I was drinking far more than ever, and I was gambling 10 times as bad.
Mm-hmm. That wasn't so much then, from what you're saying, wasn't a reaction to the breakup. It was more you had free time, you had more time to do what you wanted to do, and you sort of, this was like kind of something you were doing in your spare time because you had more of it.
Yeah, no, that's it. Like at the time, was people were maybe what I said, you're taking this breakup, but you're off the rails. But I had great times with her and stuff as well. But it wasn't to do that. It was, I felt that I was I had this release of not being tied down. Like, I'm not saying she was tying me down because she was a great girl, but I thought I've got my teenage years back, you know. So I was I was just gambling like mad, you know. And like, I never missed a day of work, but after work and stuff, I would have been over to the wee bar and stuff, and maybe had 7-8 pints most nights. And I never even knew. I wouldn't have thought twice about driving home and stuff. And that's mental. Like, these things are insane. You can't be drink driving, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. When did you find then that throughout your kind of process of gambling, and when did you kind of see it sort of escalate? You know, at that point there, you're starting to see, well, I'm hearing that you're drinking and you're gambling more, but when did you actually, did the penny drop and say, well, geez, I have a problem here, or did it get really out of hand?
Well, numerous times it would come into your head, like, you could maybe get paid on a Friday and you have no money by a Sunday or Monday or whatever, sometimes even earlier, and you're just enough by to do you, but you'd always convince yourself, right, I don't have a problem, I'll stop. And you could stop for 5 weeks, no bother, but then you go back to it, and you'll always go back to it. So for me, that's a problem, because if you keep coming back to it, that's something you know is not good for you, and you have a problem. But I wasn't aware of that, so it led me down the line of, you know, I was lying, manipulating, you know, I took money that didn't belong to me, and all these things, and I couldn't see a way out, you know. It wasn't a massive debt, but in my own head, like, I just couldn't see a way out. And I have a conscience too. When I do something to harm others or do something, it really plays up in my head. I don't think about it at the time, because that's what my addiction does to me. But even for example, I was laying in bed. I moved on then, and I got another partner. And I do believe that through my gambling, that I destroyed my defects of character, and that ruined the relationship too, you know. Because I was clinging on to attention off anything, whether it was women or anything, you know, and I couldn't give her the full 100%. But I remember laying in bed beside her one night, and I'd lost a lot of money gambling. And at 3 or 4 in the morning, I was trying to win it back. And she was rolling over saying, "Who are you taxing? Who are you taxing?" And I said, "Nobody, nobody," and hiding the phone. Like, in hindsight now, like, I wouldn't be writing her mental health. All I had to do was say I'm gambling, you know. And she would been sitting there in her head, not sleeping either, and then for weeks accusing me of no taxing other women and stuff. And that wasn't that's not fair on her, you know.
Yeah.
But you don't realize it. I didn't realize things till I was 10 weeks into my treatment program, getting all these flashbacks of what my defects of character through drinking and gambling was doing to others.
Right. How long from that time, like, say you were 18, 19 years of age, and when did you kind of go into the treatment of things? When was that? How long was that gap?
I didn't go for a long time, because I was on and off. As I said, I was on and off gambling and stopping. I could stop for 3, 4, 5 weeks. And then I think maybe the longest time I went off, it was maybe 5 months. But when you go back, you go back to 10 times as hard. And I would never admit that I had a problem, you know. But so, and that, I would believe it expired out of control from I was 28 till 33 till I went into rehab. I went in at and I had to pick up the phone. I took money that didn't belong to me, and I gambled it. I was trying to wait to get it back, and couldn't get it back in time. And I left a note that I was going to take my own life, and I was sorry. My mum found it. She went on to work in a panic because when she was young, she found her brother who took his own life while he was babysitting me, you know. So she didn't want to get them same triggers. So what she done was she rang my sisters, who drove, one drove from Cookstown and one drove from Nguyen down to Oma here. And they came in time, and it was my niece was only three, like, and she just, they must have been talking. Kids are smart, they can overhear things, like, and she just came running over to me at 3 years of age and hugged me and says, Martin, are you sick? Are you okay? And that I just broke down crying, you know, and that's when I just said I need help and told them everything, you know, because they wasn't really, I knew. And I had to phone the doctors and stuff, and then I just was recommended to go to Concilio's in Newry for 12 weeks, and, you know, so I phoned up, and it was a 3 or 4 week waiting list, but
yeah.
I mean, I had no phone. I was broke. I had no phone. I wouldn't leave my room, my bedroom, for 4 weeks while I was on that waiting list. You know, couldn't look at nobody. People would ring my mum, worried about looking to speak to me, worried about me, and I couldn't speak to nobody. I was down. Like, I went in there. I just didn't want to be alive. Like, you know.
Yeah, and I think from your conscience was kind of playing on you about there at that stage.
Yep.
Looking back, would your mum or your family, anybody sort of pick up on things that you were doing, or to kind of realize that you were in a wee bit of a slump and maybe struggling a bit? Do you think they could look back and kind of pick up on anything, or is there anything that you could sort of say that would have been noticeable for anybody else sort of picking up that might be have a family member that's doing the like of this?
Yeah, I think it's my ex partner would have told me that I had a gambling problem, and I would have had the head of her and told her I didn't and stuff, you know, because you can hide it. My mum and sisters used to tell me all the time, and I used to go mental at them, you know, and then so all of a sudden they don't want the reaction that I was giving them,
yeah,
you know. So
yeah.
They don't say nothing in badness, you know. They maybe talk behind your back, but I wouldn't know. And then you can tell how many lies you're convincing yourself to believe in them, but that's only because nobody's calling you out in them, so they don't believe them. Like, they're not stupid. But for me, I would just, if I was giving somebody a bit of advice, I would just be telling them, you know, watch out for you know, maybe their own mental health or their motivation, you know. Don't rush in and accuse them, because they're going to lie and get angry and defend themselves. Mm-hmm. Look out, are they always financially buying money? Are they eating well? Are they always telling lies about money? You know, because I had told lies all the time about money, about bills coming out, this and that. And
yeah.
Look out for mood changes, because if they're winning, their moods, they're way up in the high, and if they're losing, they're way in the low. But the money one's the big thing. If they're always borrowing or lying and or else spend too much time on the phone, because everything's phone now, you know, because you can hide it. You know, nobody's talking about you in the boogies. So if they spend too much time on their phone and they're hiding it, and you know, they're always leaving the room or acting suspicious, you know, I would suggest, you know, maybe I wouldn't go and accuse them. I would maybe say to them, look, is everything all right? If you have any problems, come and talk to me, you know, because
it's a hard line, isn't it? Because you care about this person. As you said, you don't want to accuse them. You're going to get a defensive reaction out of that. So it's like, it's very hard to kind of approach that person in a way that they know that it's caring. That's not being, a judgmental or anything. They just want to help and kind of open your eyes to what obviously is happening. But that's a difficult one, isn't it?
It is. No, it's us addicts. It doesn't matter where it's drink, drugs, gambling, whatever your addiction is.
Yeah.
If you're not willing to surrender and admit that you have a problem, you're going to be so defensive. So if you come to me 2 years, 3 years ago and say to me, "Hey, Marty, you have a gambling problem," I'm going to just turn and say, "How dare you? How do I look at such and such?" No, you deflect it. Look, on such and such, he gambles more than me. I don't do that, you know. So the best way is to start planting seeds, you know. So, like, I always talk about it. At the time I was sharing this with Mike, we were going to football, and he had told me, you know, he was in Gamblers Anonymous and all, and there's another fella in rehab that he knows went to rehab, and they're doing this and that, and they're getting, and, you know, but in my head, first thing I say is, keepers, I'm not that bad yet, you know, so it's not yet to talk about it. But then when I go home, like that seed's planted, I'd be sitting there in bed saying, is that maybe what I need to do? Is that, but look, mm-hmm. I think, unfortunately, I think everybody needs to hit the rock bottom, as I say, to get help. But there is, but what I would try and encourage buddy is, because there is far too many suicides, that no matter what rock bottom is, there's two things. One, there's a way out. Everything can be fixed eventually. Maybe not in the timing you want it, but it will work out. It will work out. And two, that just because you've hit your rock bottom, and like I did, that I believe it 18 months ago, there's always a trap door. I could easily fall back under. So that's why I keep doing the right things, you know. And how far I've came in 18 months is, if you had said that to me 18 months ago, what would my life be like now?
Yeah.
I would have laughed at you, you know.
Yeah.
I'd laugh at you.
You don't sort of see the long term. We kind of underestimate what we can do in the long term. But 18 months is a long time. And especially where, like, gambling's such a very easy thing now. You've got apps on your phone and stuff. You know, it's very easy to, 18 months is it's a credit to yourself. But, like, do you think the companies and stuff are doing enough to kind of reduce the likelihood of this gambling problem? Like I saw an advertisement basically, and I don't know what gambling thing it was, but it was saying you can minimize the time that you're on the app, things like that. I mean, do you think that it's enough, or I think you know, what's your thoughts?
Maybe I'd highly from my I would get a bit angry at stuff like that, because you know, the companies know what they're at. They're not silly. If you're in amongst your active addiction, your awareness is not there. So see these things and the signs that I see now that I never seen when I was gambling. When the fun stops, I never seen that 3 years ago, 4 years ago. But now my awareness is back. I see it. So when you're stuck in amongst and the fogs all around your head and you're gambling, you're not looking out for stuff like when the fun stops or, you know, reduce how much you can gamble out, because you can. You can set your limit, but you can go open many accounts as you want. I've closed all mine. There is a website, and I forget, GameStop. You can go on to GameStop, and that means I can never open an online account again, you know. And but look, if people want to get away to gamble, they'll gamble, they'll get somebody else to put it on for them, you know.
So yes,
and I'd be looking through Snapchat there, you know. And I would click onto the Sky Sports part of it on Snapchat and just watch like the football highlights of the goals. So every clip, there's a 10-second break of an advertisement of a gambling website, you know.
Yeah.
And these, I'm sitting saying like fair enough, I am in a strong position, but who's to say that doesn't trigger somebody else vulnerable, you know?
Yeah.
And it's mental that there's advertisements everywhere about gambling. And gambling, when I went into that treatment room center, I was only one in for gambling at the time. Everybody else was in for drinking drugs. And the woman at the reception said to me, "What are you in for a drink?" And I said, "No, I'm in for gambling." And she looked at me and she just went like that. And she says, "It's worse." And she lost her husband to alcoholism. And she just shook her head and says, "It's worse." Because you can hide it. It's in your face. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of, I think it's mental what the companies are doing on the advertising, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I want to kind of touch on is, like, obviously what you have learned from the experience. You can talk about, you know, what you learned in that 12 weeks, how you managed yourself and what you've kind of learned to kind of coping mechanisms, things like that. For gamblers, what was that experience like, and what have you sort of learned and implemented now in your life?
I went into that place and with very little hope, very little. Didn't think it would help me. I thought it would come out 12 weeks and I'd be still in a bad place, you know. But in 12 weeks, you know, the first couple of weeks are just, you're just finding your feet and you don't really understand, and your head's like a washing machine, you're thinking too much. But if you put a bit of work into it and stuff in the counseling sessions you get and stuff, I learned lots. Like I learned lots about my defects of character. Like, you know, I'd have been paranoid. I'd have been hated being judged, but I would have been very judgmental. I'd have been jealous. If you had said to me, I'd have said no. I was jealous of people doing well. I was jealous of people who had fancy things. I was, you know, insecure. I was a manipulator. I was a liar. All these things that I was constantly learning throughout my behaviors, you know, that I had manipulated or lied or bent a story to get it my own way. I was very self-centered. I had too much pride and too much ego because around football and stuff would have been liked and would have been seen as the class clown, as they would say, you know, always messing about. But I was all the wrong things, you know, and especially pride and ego I had to let go of. And but you know, you learn a lot about yourself. And when I came out, I still got in contact with whatever you want to call it, a sponsor or a counselor, and I still do a lot of work with him, you know, right up until, you know, 18 months later, I'm still on doing a lot of work with him, you know, regular contact on my defects of character and stuff. And if I have any head trouble, I'll pick up the phone to somebody else in recovery and we'll discuss it. And it's you know, as I say, you're not cured after 12 weeks. No. It's still a lot of work, a lot of growth. And I think I've changed. Everybody said it. And I you know, I would never have said I'm proud of myself, you know, but I'm very proud of how far I've came over the last 18 months, you know. Mm-hmm. But a people pleaser as well. I was a massive people pleaser. I hated somebody not liking me. So I would have went the extra mile for them.
I just want to kind of get more in depth. Like, do you do anything outside of like the phone calls or the like personally, like something like routine? Like there's a lot of things that it's out there. You can go on YouTube and there's loads of videos to kind of help your mindset, stuff like that. And yeah, the morning routine, things like that, that you've sort of implemented to kind of get to where you're at now.
Yeah, I have a lot of things, you know, just running through a typical day, you know. I have a great believer. I'm a great believer in God, you know. I don't go to mass or whatever it is and be seen stuff. I just have a relationship with him. And in the mornings, I wake up, I hand my life over. I would say a quick few prayers, you know, not only for myself but for others. I think praying for others, you know, who are maybe struggling, it helps them.
Yeah,
you know, in my head, and if you don't have a God, you don't believe in God, that's up to yourself. Though I wouldn't judge anybody, but that's what I do. I'd read I would say a few prayers, and I would just ask him, you know, to look after me today, you know, and help me get through the day and remove my defects of character. And I would also then start off with a list, three things every day, three different things what I'm grateful to have in my life.
Yeah,
you know, and it is something as simple as
gratitude.
Gratitude list, having my hearing and my eyesight, having a roof over my head, having food on the table. These are simple things, and that keeps me humble about, instead of looking the fancy lifestyle that I would have all craved. I would just get up and addicts, you know, one's never enough. I'm doing 2 degrees at the minute. I'm doing counselling. It's a massive help for me, but I believe it's something I'm also going to be very good at and give back.
Yes.
So not only my counselling, development in Jordanstown, and then I play a lot of sports. You know, I play Gaelic football. I play soccer. I'm actually a player manager for my own soccer club that have been there for, you know, 8 years, and they're nice, very good to me. And the chairman, you know, now it's an hour drive away down to Lurgan, but you know, I love that club and it's very good to me. The chairman's been very good to me from even throughout my hard times. So I look at it now that I'm giving back, you know.
Yes.
I'm only managing the second team, but I'm playing and I'm enjoying it. Whereas people would say to you, you're too good to be playing that. But I would say, look, it's all about enjoying it and giving back now, you know.
Yes.
I actually play for my Gaelic club as well, and they recently put a third team in, so I dropped down to play third. So I really love it because, you know, less pressure gives me time to study. But meaning that I met people through my own rehab. Start off, there were three of us. Started a group of maybe 18 or more, like, you know, and we're doing a lot of charity events coming up, stuff. So the mountains, I guess, I've been the most of the mountains across Northern Ireland and Ireland over the last year. So get a real buzz of it. Peace and serenity from the mountains. But again, if the mountains might be for you, you could get into.
Yeah, if that's not for you, then no, you can. You don't have to get into. You can get out for walks, or you can get into, you know, reading. I read books. Or
what are you reading at the minute?
At the minute, I'm reading a book about recovery as well. You know, so Richie Sadler used to play for Republic of Ireland Millwall. He retired at the age of 24. He turned to drinking drugs. Now he's a counsellor and stuff, and I find it amazing. Like, I'm only 5 chapters in, but. I like reading about other people's recovery. It gives me a massive boost, you know.
Yes. I think all those things are changing from that negative distraction of the gambling and putting it into something more positive. Like you're just moving your energy from that negative part into like something more positive, you're saying, and putting more of your time to good use. And there is something that we are missing is actually being that selfless and putting other people before us, but like not to say it the way that you were doing it was a people pleaser before. Yeah. It's different from that. It's just making talking about things that are important. I think there's a quote, there's a talk to the people that matter about the things that matter to you mostly. Do you know what I mean? So those things that maybe you're struggling with or finding hard to kind of understand, or just having somebody to listen to, I think that's probably what you're doing now with and will do more of. Have you got like see to kind of mention or have somebody that is maybe gambling and they're kind of in that there, they've got a seed planted, as you were to say earlier, what would you say to them about moving forward and about taking that, and not so that it doesn't get to that point where it gets just uncontrollable and hard to manage and things where it gets to that point? Like, if
I would share a bit on my own Instagram page, you know, and not much, but there's times I would share, you know, and just be talk about my own problems, you know, and that's only if there is somebody out there. But a lot of people have, I would say in the last year anyway, I have well over 10, 11 people that reached out to me, you know, and I would never tell anybody. I would never discuss it. I would delete the messages and stuff. But and it's men and women. You know, a few women have reached out to me just about mental health. And they would ask me just probably coping mechanisms or, you know, and stuff. And I think so. One, I think it's don't tell me, show me. I think a lot of people are now seeing how I live, and that's when they know they cannot talk to me. They know what I went through, so they can talk to me. So it wouldn't be. Don't tell, like I always say, don't tell me, show me. Just get on about your business, be humble, and people will see a change, and they would ask you. But in terms of gambling, I've had 3 or 4, and they've asked me, and I just tell them, you know, all I can do is tell them my story, tell them things I've done, tell them things that's brought me, tell them the changes, how I feel now. I'm sleeping, I can put the head in the pillow and sleep. Signpost them to the help centers, ask them, do they want to go to a meeting? I still go to meetings. I've no bother talking about it. Like, I'll probably still go to meetings from now to day. I'll probably go to meetings because I've met great people in them and it helps me. Or just come out and be honest, take ownership. But a lot of ones struggle because they'll make excuses and they would say stuff like, I don't want my mum to find out or my partner to find out, or, you know, but you have to. These things, you can't keep a secret. But then I would just question, are they just losing a wee bit of money and feeling sorry for themselves that time because I've done it? Or do they really want to quit? You know, because it is hard. It's not easy just to stop. So, but as I say, I would just say that I just tell them, you know, you need to come out and be honest and get help. Get a counselor, get the meetings, go to rehab, do whatever you have to do, and no excuses if you really want to stop. But some people don't do it, and I know they don't do it. But as I say, I would I wouldn't get angry if, you know, if I hear somebody continue, or don't say, what a waste of time. I look at it and just say, I feel sorry for them. And I always tell them, look, I'm always here. Ring me at any stage, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's not a great feeling to go through. Like.
No, I think the main word you'd said there, I think ownership is massive. And it's not just for maybe even gamblers or whatever, but this is for every sort of thing across the board. It could be weight gain, or it could be drug addiction, or it could be just saying that you wanted to do something, but you're not really doing it.
100%. And I say it's easier said than done. I know it's not easy, but like I've admitted now as well that, you know, when I take a drink, I'm powerless over alcohol, so I don't drink. Because when I left my first drink, I don't know what I'm going to do, or who I'm going to annoy, or where my night's going to go. So what I do is I don't drink. But the main key thing is that you can restart your day at any stage and stuff, because you'll have a bad day. And instead of saying, fuck it, I'll go take a drug or I'll take a drink or take a gamble, and you could be off at 3 months, 3 years. Like, there's times where I had a bad day and I'd say, fuck it, what's the point here? You know, I'm trying my best here. And you would maybe say, sure, may as well just go on the rip. But when I fast forward the clock, I know where it's going to bring me, you know. And I used to have a lot of fears in my life. And the main fear now is going back to my old habits, my old lifestyle, my old life, becoming unreliable, untrustworthy, becoming the person I was before. So that's my biggest fear in life now. So instead of saying frig it, I just know it'll pass. I can restart my day, or I know tomorrow will be a different day, you know. And I'm not saying that my life's rosy at the minute. I know I still get bad days, but I know how to manage them now. So
everybody
I would always
does.
Say that. But for me, the important thing is, as we talked about at the start, is talking. You have to talk. I pick up my phone on any time I have any wee simple struggle, and I'll ring somebody who's in recovery like me. Because why? They understand what I'm going through.
Yes.
Whereas my other friends, who I love the bits, will try their best to give me advice, but they just won't understand. They won't have the same feelings. Mm-hmm. Whereas no matter what I've done or what I'm feeling, the people in recovery who are with me or even years sobriety ahead of me will have felt them 100 times over. So they'll know what to say. So picking up the phone is important, you know, and talking, you need to talk. Like, don't bottle it up. It'll drive you insane.
Is there anything you want to mention? Organizations that people can kind of go to kind of get more help and things like that?
Well, no, if anybody is struggling, I don't, if it's like alcohol, drugs, or gambling, you know, there is that Sister Concilio's Camara that I went to, you know, a lot of people would say, oh, I couldn't go for 12 weeks. What about this? And what about that? But here, I tell you what, 12 weeks in there was none. It flew by. 12 weeks to change your whole life. It's well worth it. But if it might not work for everybody. If there is meetings, or there is, you know, go see your doctor, or, you know, just talk, or even, you know, reach out to yourself or myself, or listen to podcasts. You know, there is a lot of places out there, just people aren't aware of it, you know. But again, I would like to see more funding and opportunities, you know, but at the minute, the resources we do have. Whatever your addiction or your problem or your mental health problem is, I would definitely look up and see what place there is, and don't be afraid to pick up that phone, because that's the hardest part. Just pick it up, and then people will be so friendly, because they have years of experience of working these places. You know, they're going to show you love and empathy and care. They're not going to judge you, because our own minds are our worst enemy. Like, I remember even getting to a doctor and sitting there, and I'd be pouring out thinking, everybody's wondering what I'm here for and all, you know. And nobody, we're not that important, you know. Nobody really cares about us. Everybody's got their own lives. So I would definitely, whatever your struggle is, talk to somebody and talk to a professional, because they're well used to it, and you don't have to suffer for long till it drag you to your worst places. You can change your life. Like,
yeah, and that's it. That's a really important message. A great way to kind of finish off, I think, on that positive note. Murray, I want to really again thank you for taking the time to have a chat and talk to me about this issue. I think hopefully somebody who is out there listening that can sort of have a wee bit of courage to take the next step if they are struggling. So thanks again for your time, buddy. I really appreciate it, and good luck with the rest of your recovery and everything else that you're going through. You're doing awesome there from what you're saying.
Thank you, Seamus, and just keep doing what you're doing. I think it's amazing what you're doing, and you will help a lot of people. Even if I don't reach out there or tell you, you will be helping people, so keep it up. Thank you.
Cheers, buddy. Thanks very much.